Texas that I've seen in Texas is it just says Texas, bigger than France. So I'm going to be trying to characterize CALO, which is a DARPA-funded project towards building a personal assistant that is ontologically enabled. And I'm also going to be interjecting a few comments that I've, or a few kind of opinions that I've formed over the years since working on Psych and starting in 1990 and then coming here to work on CALO more recently. And thus, many of those names are principal people involved with CALO. There are many more people involved with CALO. But an outline of my talk and the question, so the goal is to go till 12:30, is that right? Or 12:30, okay. So, okay. Okay. Well, I'll stay still now.
Thank you.
So there's the outline of my talk. I'm going to start with the problem, talk about how we develop the knowledge base or the ontology, talk about some of the challenges, some of the deployment issues, and touch on future work that is facing us. So CALO, as you can tell, stands for Cognitive Agent That Learns and Organizes. These are some of the things that we want CALO to do. We want it to learn as it goes along. We want to be able to tell CALO, go out and buy me a laptop. We want to show CALO, this is how I buy a laptop, and then have it learn. We want it to tell us why it's doing what it's doing and have a sense as to where it learned its things and be able to reflect in that way. And, of course, we want it to be robust, not a brittle system. And it's just, you know, obviously it's an office environment, so that's the context. So what you see here is an overview of some of the main, what I'll call, sub-agents of the CALO system. And I'm going to be touching on different parts of those as the talk goes on. Yes?
Do they have some central place where they can store all that information?
The short official answer is yes. The nuts and bolts, I would say there are about two or two and a half places. So we desire to have a centralized knowledge base. But this is an engineering project involving, you know, at least 20 different subcontractors, SRI as the principal. And so so right now, there's the what I'll call the main knowledge base is the knowledge base of the system called IRIS, which is basically represented by this. So the what I'm pointing to for people out in telephone land is the organize and manage information. And also for this this system, the prep, what I'll call the prep pack system. Another knowledge base that isn't fully integrated quite yet with the IRIS KB is the sort of procedural side of things, and that's under Karen Myers. So what I'm mainly talking about is schedule and organize and time and monitor and manage tasks. So that is what I'll call the second big knowledge base. And so I think for year three, these things, they're somewhat coupled, but they're not tightly coupled. Now, there is an overall schema that is followed, an overall ontology that's followed, the Core Plus Office ontology, but there's various extensions on it. But the knowledge base itself, you know, the actual facts asserted, you know, that my name is Bill Gerald and my phone number is, you know, that's what I'm, those sort of data level facts are the things that are, so you'll find a lot of scheduling information in this sort of procedural, so-called knowledge base. And I don't know too much about that. And then the IRIS system is a separate knowledge base, and what I'm calling the half knowledge base is the meeting system, the meeting assistant. So where you see observe and mediate interactions, that's really where the meeting assistant system lives, and so it shares a lot of the IRIS KB, but there are some other ways that it doesn't share. But I'm not the expert on that. But I think the long-term goal, you know, this is a 5-year initiative. We're in year three now. So I think you know, things are becoming more and more centralized as time goes on. So, and you know, a reason to share knowledge, you know, you want to share knowledge because, you know, if you're scheduling a task over here and you know in the organize and manage world that so and so is working on this task and someone else is working on the task, you may want to integrate that other person's time constraints while you're scheduling. So that's an example of why knowledge sharing is important. So as I've implied, we need an ontology, an overarching database schema, if you will, an overall kind of formal machine understandable worldview to kind of integrate these systems. So let me give you a use case example to motivate parts of the ontology. So suppose somebody sends an email to Bob and says, we need to meet soon. We want our system to learn that that's an important message. We want our system to learn that that's a meeting request. So already we can see in our ontology we want a class for meetings. We want a way of representing importance. We want a way of representing emails and people in emails and so forth. Suppose that Bob responds to the sender. Now we realize, oh, the sender is Sue. You know, Bob suggests meeting Wednesday at 4. So we want our system to recognize that this is a proposal for a time. 4 p.m. is a time. Let's meet then. We want our system to go into the schedule, into Sue and Bob's schedule, and make sure that there's an open time there. And then we see that Sue responds to Bob and acknowledges the request. So we want our system to learn that the text in that email is a meeting accept event. So behind all, you know, all we have is a sequence here of three, you know, at a kind of current view in data world, we have three email messages. But in our heads, in our human heads, there's much more going on here. We have concepts for Bob and Sue. We have images associated with them. We have interpersonal relationships. We have projects and people associated with those projects and so forth. So that is what we want Kalo to learn. We want Kalo to learn this hidden world of knowledge that is behind all those email messages. So here is a nice schematic that reflects what I'm talking about. So the black links here, for example, we have, the circles correspond to classes or sets of instances. So we have email folders and we have emails. And the filed in relationship holds between emails and email folders. So that's a directly observable, you know, the computer can directly observe that. That's ground truth. But we also want the system to realize that, you know, my SRI folder is associated, or let's say my Iris email folder is associated with the Iris project. We wanted to make that inference. So the red links are all the kinds of relationships that we want the system to infer. So every link you see here, whether it's black or red, is something that is a relationship that we need to represent in the ontology. And every circle, people, action items, projects, etc., these are concepts or classes or in some cases instances that we want to represent in the ontology. So I've mentioned some of these different functionalities already, I made a comment during Kurt's talk about the importance of questions, and one of my beliefs formed over 10 years working at SciCorp is that it's very important to have to start with a set of clear requirements. In the case of a knowledge-based system, a lot of times that's questions. In other systems, you might want to characterize some behavior that it performs. Well, in many of the DARPA efforts, there's the way they evaluate, the way they start off with requirements is by coming up with a set of questions. And an important part of the parlance here is the distinction between a parameterized question and an instantiated question. So here's a sample of some of the questions, and we're actually going to be evaluated on these questions and how well Kalo can answer these questions in just a matter of a handful of months. So, for example, let's pick the bottom one. It says, what time, the very bottom here, it says, what time is mentioned in IO colon email? So this is a parameterized question. The parameter is email. And so it stands for a whole suite of questions. It stands for a whole suite of question instances. So, you know, what time is mentioned in email 42? So the goal is to make sure the system can answer. You know, for example, I showed you earlier in the slide that the time mentioned was 4 p.m. So the correct answer there is 4 p.m. You know, and the distinction between instantiate and parameterize gets to an important point about starting with requirements. So if you just start with a set of question instances and you design your system to only answer those instances, that's sort of teaching to the test. Obviously, we don't want to do that. We want to be able to ensure that the system generalizes to arbitrary cases. And that's a reason that we want to parameterize our questions, so to ensure that the system can answer any version of any of these questions. Any instantiated version of any of these questions. So the way the test works is we keep these questions in mind and we hope that our system will do well on a sample set of question instances when it gets evaluated by the independent evaluators associated with IET, a different subcontractor on the Kalo project. So now I'm going to talk about some of the KB development. And if anyone has any questions, comments, please raise your hand. So I'm going to start with the framework for representing knowledge, talk about some of the processes we did, and go into a little more detail about some of the content. So we started. Go ahead. Yeah.
Yeah. My one question was on the earlier part.
Uh-huh.
Is the overall aim of the Kalo project to be able to take a process anywhere in the process and be able to capture information about that and ask questions about it or have it learn from any point in the process?
I would say the central aim of Kalo is learning, and the secondary aim is to learn in an office context. Now, I'm not sure I entirely understood your question.
In that case, the office context is you get an email.
Right.
Okay. Could that be the second or third email, and then you put it back first to that, or does it have to start with email one?
Right. So let's say it got. So let's say our Kalo is in a blank state, and it gets this email saying, "Yes, that sounds like a good time." Is that an example of what you're saying? So yes, we want our system. So we want the system to be robust to surprises. For example, we want the system to be able to live in the real world. And the real world is a buggy world, and you often don't have complete information, especially. Right. So yes, we desire, obviously the more information it has, the better it will do. But the whole purpose is to push on AI in a real world environment. So, did that answer your question? Yeah. So, we started with what I call, what everyone calls the core ontology. So, the core ontology has been years in the making. It was born long before Kalo was created. So, Bruce Porter and Ken Barker are at UT Austin, and Peter Clark used to be at UT Austin. He's now at Boeing. There's a wonderful KCAP paper which describes their approach in detail. So the component library is also known as CLib for short. Now, it's written in a language called KM, and it's written for a knowledge-based system called the knowledge machine. And I'll say a little bit more about that. But their goal in writing this was to build a knowledge base that was highly reusable. They wanted, in their paper they say, we wish to obviate the knowledge engineer. In other words, we wish to put it bluntly, put the knowledge engineer out of business. In other words, make it so that we can take these basic components and encode arbitrary knowledge by combining knowledge compositionally. So as a result, we'll have the hope is that we can have a domain-independent knowledge base and then use subject matter experts to take these little atomic units, combine them, and get reusability that way. So they have very fundamental, simple concepts like move, attach, simple spatial relationships, simple temporal relationships, and they try to richly axiomatize those. So they've taken Longman's thesaurus, Rege's thesaurus, and looked at some of the most frequent verbs and used those as the starting points of where to represent knowledge. So we started with that, and then we extended that. So the hope is by starting with this highly extensible, very general domain-independent knowledge base or ontology, we will be able to continually expand on it and have a good starting base, place to start from. Now, I said that C-Live was written in the language called KM. OWL was the main language we used throughout the KALO project to ensure interoperability. We had a translator to translate KM to OWL, and I'll talk a little bit of that more later. I'll talk about it right now. So KM, even though it's a frame-based language, has been modified and enhanced to allow all kinds of rule-like expressions in it. Now, OWL, as you probably know, doesn't allow rules yet. They're working on that. So that's an example of the kind of thing that our translator does not translate from C-Lib into the OWL version of the ontology. But it turns out that's okay, because so far we have a kind of database schema-like ontology. It doesn't require much in the way of rules. But we're soon going to be facing a time when we're going to need rules. Now, there are other aspects which I know less about. For example, the procedural system, Karen Meyer's system, Spark, has its own process representation language. And another important thing to another important point to make is we're starting to have a system called ILR, Integrated Learning and Reasoning, which is built on the probability consistency engine, which allows a learning algorithm to associate weights with different assertions and even rules. So the system will be less, less rigid and inflexible. So now I'm going to talk about, having talked about the overall knowledge representation framework, I'm going to talk about how it came into being. So in year one, when I wasn't working on the project, there were many different groups that had input. They submitted their requirements. People would come up with classes and rules. Some people would write formal axioms. People like Jerry Hobbs, who's a famous guy in knowledge representation. We also tried to reuse existing knowledge. So, for example, we adopted the ICAL standard, and we adopted some work by Radar Networks, which was a subcontractor. At the end of year two, beginning of year three, the feeling was that we had a good rough draft, but it needed some cleaning up. Things were too wordy, if you will. Certain binding paths were very long and unnecessarily circuitous. So we essentially rewrote the ontology and tried to simplify it where possible. So as I said, we use OWL, and in year three, we've allowed more of the software engineers to actually write some of their own OWL files. And so Protégé has become, in addition to KM, Protégé has become an important development environment for us. So now I'm going to mention a few things about the scope of the ontology. As you can see, there's all different kinds of knowledge domains here, all centered around office-type stuff, anywhere from contact information, what your address is, your phone number, facts about yourself, representation of emails, representations of organizations, facts about meetings, and some of the far more far out types of piece of the ontology have to do with learning methods, learning algorithms, different types of problems we need to learn, and provenance. In other words, how did I come to know this piece of information? When did I learn it? Which agent told it to me? That's another part of the ontology. Yes, question. Not at all. Please do.
So, one thing I'm curious about is you know, what did Robin Forreys propose like 15 years ago? This approach to trying to understand things like negotiation and commitment in the office environment, and especially in email environments, where they would differentiate between asking a question, giving a reply, asking somebody following up on that commitment, etc. Have you tried creating an ontology for any of that and tried to support that level of understanding of the process?
Yes. So I would say I would characterize it as minor, but so within the meeting assistance system, there are classes for questions, answering a question, making an assertion. So, sort of a rudimentary elocutionary force ontology. And so, the cool thing about it is that this is happening. You know, I've seen these meet. You know, there's a meeting and there's a speech recognition system working there, and it tries to learn what is a question, what is an action item, what is an answer to a question, and so forth. I'm going to say a little bit more about that later. I think I saw. Yes. I can't answer that question because I don't know very much about their ontology. So, ask me in about 3 months. did I see another hand? No. Okay. So, here's an example of, here's a hunk of the ontology, a class called Chat Session Message, and you'll see the comment on the class, and you'll see it's superclasses. So, this is a pretty shallow ontology in the sense that, like I said, there aren't formal rules associated with it, and a lot of the definition is encoded here in English. And we're not really at a stage yet where we can formally axiomatize all the things said there. And this is a good time to make reference to some of the things that Kurt was saying and possibly items for future discussion. So one of my beliefs formed at PsyCorp was that, you know, it's hard to formally define concepts. And a lot of times you need to move on and go to the next thing. So what do you do? Instead, I mean, the goal is to write necessary and sufficient conditions. In other words, to write a formal definition for your term. But a lot of times you have to be informal. And you can talk about cases. And so an important, you know you're done when you can write some good positive examples and some good negative examples. So a positive example is, as I say in the comment here, the chat session message where, you know, Bob says, "Hi, Fred," to Fred. But a negative example is a portion of a message. So, "Hi, Fr," you know, is not a chat session message. It's a part of a chat session message. So, unlike milk, for example, something where if you have a piece of milk and you cut it in half, it's still milk, a chat session message is not substance-like. And this is mentioned in an example. It's not coded in an axiom. And another way I've sort of wimped out in encoding the ontology is you'll see I've only specified a necessary condition. I haven't specified a sufficient condition. The first sentence says, "Instances of chat session message are complete messages passed between chat participants during a chat session." In other words, if a thing is an instance of chat session message, then all that other stuff follows to it. So that's a necessary condition. I haven't even spelled out a sufficient condition. Say again?
What slide number are you showing?
Oh, we're on slide 17.
Okay, the ANC is showing 16.
Ah.
Okay.
Is there a delay? Peter is... Oh, okay. Oh, sorry. So do you see it now?
Oh, yeah. Okay, that's fine.
Yeah. So you'll see the first sentence there, as I was mentioning, you know, it's just in English. And even though it's in English, I can't even write a necessary sufficient definition. I can only write the necessary condition. And you know, for engineering purposes, it is important to write a sufficient condition. In many cases, so that's maybe a useful schema to take away is you know, where possible, write necessary and sufficient conditions, but where impossible, just go for the necessary conditions, and also use cases. Don't be afraid of using positive and negative cases, and in some cases, it's even good to specify cases that you're agnostic about. So we're currently in debate about this current case. It doesn't matter for our engineering purpose to decide whether it's in the category or out of the category. But it's good to document that so you know where the fuzz is, so that discussions a year from now can make use of that fact. So this is just to say, this next slide here, number 18, is just to say how big the ontology is, roughly. Some of the challenges we faced, moving on to challenges, I'll say a little bit about reusing iCalendar and representing meetings and so forth. So in reusing iCalendar, so we started with this very long specification, and we found that many of the relations in it weren't needed. So we didn't want to bloat the ontology unnecessarily, so we chopped away some of the things that really weren't going to be part of our application. We renamed some of the terms, and we linked pieces of iCal to important other bits of the ontology, such as time and people and so forth. Representing meetings, I'm going to talk about a few different aspects of how we represent meetings. And this is something from CLib, from the component library, that's, you know, it looks like a pretty complicated diagram. And all it's trying to represent is communication. You know, Bob sends a message to Fred, or Bob says a word to Fred. So why, you know, what's going on here? Why do we have all this complexity? Well, CLib tries to be very general and multi-purpose, and so as they've thought about it, as they've thought about communication, they've realized that there are at least three levels to communication. There's the information level, which is the top area, you know, up to the first dotted line, and then there's the middle layer, which is the message layer, which I'll explain a little bit, and then the lowest level is the physical level. So at the top we have the information level. So at the left we see agent, so that's the speaker or the writer, communicates some message to some other agent, that is the recipient. So the object of that communication is a piece of information. Now, that's not all of communication, right? As I'm talking to you now, I'm encoding my thoughts into a language, that is English. And so there's an encode event that occurs. I am the agent of that encoding event. And the next thing that happens, the next event after that, is the conveyance of my message, that is my encoding of the information that I'm conveying you. You know, every sentence, this happens. A new convey event happens. And the thing that happens after that conveyance is a decoding event occurs in each of your minds as you're decoding what I'm saying. And what these encode, convey, and decode events operate on is the actual message, that is the encoding of information. At the lowest level, we get down to the physical layer, where these messages are transmitted through some physical medium. In some cases, it's light. In some cases, it's radio waves. In other cases, it's air. Hopefully this shows you that even a simple fact of saying a word has so much semantic richness and complexity behind it. And this is maybe a piece of why it takes so long to encode common sense knowledge. Now, another fact in practice that we found is that, you know, so far we haven't really used a tremendous amount of this this ontology in Kalo. Most the bulk of what we use is message. There are probably about 40 subclasses of message, anything from computer file to image to document to email message and so forth. There's a few subclasses of encode. It's been renamed to express. That's a minor detail. And there's only a few other important subclasses that are relevant to Kalo. But I predict that as over time, as we use more and more dimensions of Kalo and demand higher and higher levels of inference from it, we're going to have to start populating and leveraging other parts of this ontology, and thereby validate, you know, why we pull in all these concepts from the component library. Yes.
Yeah, I'm just wondering whether you formally adopt semiotics when you start with signaling, because I don't see encode could be thought of as creating the sign from the, that you're going to be transmitting. And I'm just a little bit concerned here about whether or not we're keeping the level of abstraction correct.
Yeah. Well, so I didn't author this the model of communication. I don't really have a good sense of what semiotics is, and I don't think even they would say this is the final word on what communication is. You know, I mean, many volumes have been written about semiotics, and so the idea is this is one attempt at it. What kind of questions can you answer from it? And the semioticians might say, well, look, the problem with the model is this. Well, they can do their own version of this and maybe have a micro theory of their own about it. So it's certainly critiquable.
The reason why I was asking is at the encode level, where you actually have the process where it's changed from some process, biochemical and electrical process in the brain, to, you know, a signal that you're transmitting out to some kind of language. And just a little bit not quite certain yet that that's completely accurate, but it looks pretty close.
Yeah, well, yeah, like I said, I wouldn't be a good person to defend it or argue against it.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, maybe we can talk more afterwards. Another question?
Yeah, so you've got three levels.
Yes.
Information, message, and the physical level.
Right.
And you said for message there were 30 types.
Yes.
This looks a lot like a diagram done by Jacob Marshak in 1972. For the Office of Naval Research.
Okay.
At the time there were claims that 18 people in the world understood it.
Huh.
It's really rich. But he got three or four really rich. But what he added in addition was action. And results. Have you extended this to the process and the task that you had on the earlier diagram?
So you're saying, so if, you know, someone says, take out the trash, and then, you know, I say, Fred, take out the trash, then what ensues is a, you know, if Fred is being obedient, is a taking out the trash event. So I would say the answer to that question is yes. For example, you know, I mentioned earlier that in the component library there was an event called move.
Right.
So, you know, I could represent taking out the trash as a move event in which the object move is trash. Now, trash is not in the knowledge base, but it's not too hard to add that. And then you said result. So the result, for example, would be the state such that trash is now in the garage. And so we don't have garage and we don't have trash, but we do have in. We have, you know, a sense of contained. So we could assert that the result of that move event is that the trash is in the garage. So I say the answer to your question is yes. At some level, you know, There are two sides to every story. Yes, another question. Should I go back? No. No, but... well, I guess I don't know. That's maybe a question for the lawyers or a question for Ray Perot, the director of the AI lab. The question was, does it mean an adoption of some PsyCorp thing? Well, in a sense, but I wouldn't say, you know, we're not trying to build a full model of common sense. We're trying to be very requirements focused on the office domain.
But they've done a lot of work that really shortcuts some work.
Well, yes and no. I mean, you know, Psych has 3 million assertions in it, and a lot of those assertions have nothing to do with the office environment. So you have to, you know, there's a lot of overhead dealing with Psych. So it's not a clear win. You know, they want to be web, we want to be compliant with the semantic web, and we want a system that is, you know, not too big of a hammer. So you know, there are two sides to every story, but it's... I don't think there's a strong distinction there. I'm not sure how to answer that question. Oh. Yeah, I think I said they. Yeah, yeah. Yes.
The comment is that we have access to OpenSight, which is all GPL and Java, and it's adopted by Android. The Halo project is already way larger than one computer box. If we were to use an open site, we would install it as a kind of portal and let it build background in the system. But I can't see anything like open site or anything that contributes to your desktop version of Halo.
I saw another question.
It doesn't have to be. We don't know that.
Yeah, but right now it's pretty much a desktop system, although there is this notion of shared Kalos. But we mainly think of it as a desktop. I mean, that's a fair. But I mean, we're not wedded to the fact that it must be a desktop system. Did I see another question? So we're right near time. Yeah, go ahead. Oh, sure. The communication model, right? So. And I just skipped ahead to go to the maybe what I think will be my last slide, but yeah, go ahead.
What are the rationales behind how you place different configurations?
So I'm not the best person to answer that because I didn't offer this. This is a sort of Ken Barker and Bruce Porter idea, but I think, and if you go to that paper that I reference, they will probably tell you how, but I mean, they use Roget's thesaurus and the Longman dictionary. So I think that was some of their input, and a lot of it's introspection. A lot of it's based on their own introspection.
What do you think was this
regarding? So on one of the earlier slides, well, I'll tell you, it's Porter, Barker, and Clark, KCAP 2001. So KCAP for knowledge capture. And it's mentioned on the slides. So there's some of our documentation. We use Aldoc, which is a plugin to Protégé. And there's some pluses and minuses of that, which I'll be happy to talk about afterwards. And then the only other point I wanted to make was OWL is a triple system. So if you want to say, for example, that Fred is Joe's boss in the year 2001, that's a quadruple relationship, right? It's a relationship, you know, we might have the boss is relation, Fred, Bob, and then the time, that's a triple relationship. We can't say that an owl. So what do? Well, the answer is we reify a term to refer to the relationship. So instead of saying boss is Fred Bob 2001, you know, that's a quadruple. That is, it has four terms. We say that Fred plays the boss role, and this is actually an instance of the boss role. So Fred plays the boss role, or he plays boss role 001, and that the object of Fred playing the boss of the boss role so the object of that relationship is Bob. And so now, to capture the top,
Fred playing Fred is the boss of Bob, you create a tremendously detailed relationship in order to overcome this limitation.
That's right. I think I'm saying the same thing. I don't see a distinction between what I'm saying and what you're saying.
What you're saying is that you're creating highly specialized relationships instead of reifying assertions. And the difference is that the enormous difficulty of lining apologies with each other is disentangling and relating the relationships to each other. If you can align the relationships, the classes fall into place. By complexifying the relationships, I think you're making it much more difficult to create the kind of commonality you need between the multiple modules that you'll be building.
Right, so the claim, so if I'm understanding you, what you're saying is that reifying the relationship by making, we're making life more complicated than we need to. Right.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, it's a problem in either case. You start with owls, you've got a problem regardless. But I think there are ways of doing it that are not too complicated. There are ways that are complicated that you can fit to the complicated one.
Right. So I still don't see a distinction between reifying the assertion and reifying the relationship. I mean, to me, reifying the relationship is reifying the assertion. So and the issue of making life complicated is, I mean, we can disentangle things by having, you know, different classes. So we have different role classes. For example, we have the boss role class and the the administrative, the assistant role class and the project manager role class. And then, so there are instances of, you know, there might be, you know, 50 instances of each one of those, and we can, you know, walk around the class hierarchy if we're getting our 150 different relationships confused. We can narrow that space.
Well, okay, so your intuition is different on that point, and we can only resolve it by looking at the details of how it's implemented. So we can't resolve it now,
Yeah. Maybe we should email more about this. So what's your name?
This is Pat Cassidy.
Pat Cassidy. Okay. Well, thanks, Pat. We're getting hungry and tired.
Well, I have you. I'm going to hold you up because I need to know where... I was looking for the ontology, and the only one I could find was a owl and a port into owl and part of the Kalo ontology, and what I saw in that had very few comments. In fact, no comments. I think your point was excellent about the way that comments should be created, giving examples, counterexamples, border lines, etc. And that's one of the great things that I like about site. But it completely absent from the ontology that I could find of Kalo. Is there some central source that
So I think the answer to your question is yes, but not yet. And it's simply a kind of systems integration issue to put the documentation, you know, to put the OWL docs on the publicly readable website. So it's on our list of things to do, and if someone has a specific desire, if a particular person has a specific desire to see, I can probably, you know, I'll get permission, I can probably just send it to you.
I'm very interested because the motion that you mentioned today, with that Porter chose to look at the very basic concepts and try to come to a clear understanding of what fundamental concepts were, is precisely the motion that I think is something that should be done as the basis. I was talking about a week or so ago in the ontological.
Yeah, I agree. And some people, you know, if you look at the component library, their documentation is pretty terse. And so some people really prefer very terse documentation. But I'm with you, and the more the better. I mean, there are downsides. For example, it's harder to maintain if you have a lot of documentation. But, you know, my belief is that you can live with that. But you can live with that because you can see which parts of the documentation are out of date.
Sure. Yeah. Because I mean, the other one, as you
first
have residual
that
it's very, very difficult to be
able to respond. Right. I'm sorry, Pat. I'm going to have to jump in here. It's after lunchtime, and there are several of us that are diabetic, and there's a real need. So thank you very much for your comments. We'll talk later, Pat.
Okay, I'm actually going to have to drop out of there.
Thank you. Have a nice Sunday. You've seen it. The cell phone technology has tremendous potential. But as a easy, friendly communication medium, it's not quite
the hard way to go. Yeah.
Bill, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Kurt.
I got a question before we go. How many people are calling to the wrong
people reserved, so it sounds like we're right on target.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Huh?
I got up to about 7. So 12 sounds like a good table.
We have a lunch period at this point until 4:00. And unfortunately, there's no physical lunch close by. In the package you received, there are places to go.
Is Cressida on that? Is Cressida open?
Yes.
Yeah.
Perhaps those with automobiles can raise your hand and you can form friendly contact.
Will you be locking the door?
Good question.
Good question.
I would like to.
You got a good answer to that. This is your
local field.
Sure.
I'm in the same field, and I'm quite interested to.
Sure. Yeah, you're at Derry, right?
Yeah.
In Galway?
Yeah.
You know Doug Foxlog?
Of course I know him. He's my colleague.
Oh, okay. Yeah, well.
But he's not, so I'm not in the same class with him.
Oh, I still have this.
A client of yours, actually.
Yes. Yeah.
I know.
So I had a question.